Putranam of the sons, cha also, abhavan were produced, putraha sons, ekasya of each one, shatam hundred, shatam hundred, yahi by whom? By certainly. Puranjanaha of King Puranjana. Vamshaha family. Panchaleshu in the land of Panchala. Samedataha greatly increased. Translation of these many sons each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Puranjana. So you can repeat, of these many sons.
Of these many sons.
Each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons.
Each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons.
In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Puranjana. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We must remember that Puranjana is the living entity and the city, Panchala, is the body. The body is the field of activity for the living entity, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra. Kshetragya. There are two constituents. One is the living entity, Kshetragya, and the other is the body of the living entity, Kshetra. Any living entity can know that he is covered by the body if he only contemplates the body a little bit. Just with a little contemplation, he could come to understand that the body is his possession. One could understand this by practical experience and by the authority of the Shastras. In Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, text 13, it is said, Dehinosmin yatha dehe. The proprietor of the body, the soul, is within the body. The body is taken as the panchala desha, or the field of activities wherein the living entity can enjoy the senses in their relationship to the five sense objects, namely, ganda, rasa, rupa, sparsha, and shabda, that is, sense objects made out of earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Within this material world covered by the material body of subtle and gross matter, every living entity creates actions and reactions, which are herein known allegorically as sons and grandsons. There are two kinds of actions and reactions, namely pious and impious. In this way, our material existence becomes coded by different actions and reactions. In this regard, Srila Narottama Das Thakur states, karma, kanda, jnana kanda, kevala vishera, bonda, amrita balaya yeva koi, narayoni sadapire, kadarye bhakshana kare, tara janma ara pate yai. Fruit of activities and mental speculation are simply cups of poison. Whoever drinks of them, thinking them to be nectar, must struggle very hard life after life in different types of bodies. Such a person eats all kinds of nonsense and becomes condemned by his activities of so-called sense enjoyment. Thus, the field of action and reactions by which one's descendants are increased begins with sex life. Puranjana increased his whole family by begetting sons, who in their turn begot grandsons. Thus, the living entity, being inclined towards sexual gratification, becomes involved in many hundreds and thousands of actions and reactions. In this way, he remains within the material world simply for the purpose of sense gratification and transmigrates from one body to another. His process of reproducing so many sons and grandsons results in so-called societies, nations, communities, and so on. All these communities, societies, dynasties, and nations simply expand from sex life. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, yan maitunadi grahamedi sukham hitucham. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 9th chapter, text 45. A grihamedi is one who wants to remain within this material existence. This means that he wants to remain within this body or society and enjoy friendship, love, and community. His only enjoyment is increasing the number of sex enjoyers. He enjoys sex and produces children, who in their turn marry and produce grandchildren. The grandchildren also marry and in their turn produce great-grandchildren. In this way, the entire earth becomes overpopulated. And then suddenly, there are reactions provoked by material nature in the form of war, famine, pestilence, and earthquakes, etc. Thus, the entire population is again extinguished simply to be recreated. This process is explained in Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter, text 19, as repeated creation and annihilation. Bhutva, bhutva, pralayate. Due to a lack of Krishna consciousness, all this creation and annihilation is going on under the name of human civilization. This cycle continues due to man's lack of knowledge of the soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So putranam chabhavan putra ekaikasya shatam shatam yarivai paranjano vamsha panchali shu samedataka. Alright, so Om Ganat Mirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurud Meditam Yenitasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there are at least two ways to understand this particular verse, and actually this whole story. One is the allegorical way, and one is the direct meaning. And interestingly enough, we learn many lessons, of course, but there is one lesson that we learn from both of them that is exactly the same. And that lesson in this particular context is that the illusion, entanglement of the living entity starts from something very small, just like you have starts from one action or one mistake, let's say. Just like you have a tree, the tree starts from a seed. At least some trees, of course. Some trees you can transplant branches and start a tree from. But generally, the tree starts from a seed. So a seed is a very tiny thing. So from the seed of the banyan tree comes this big, big, entangling thing. So in this particular case, the example is given here. Let's start off with the living entity's entanglement. It starts with just one mistake the living entity makes by being attracted to either the opposite sex or some other sense object, and then it builds up or it snowballs from that particular point. Just one mistake. Can you imagine that? You get punished for one mistake. That your whole existence becomes condemned because of one mistake. I mean, and you'll see this in the instance of many stories that are there in the Vedic literatures of people becoming attracted to the opposite sex. Let's take some examples. So let's take the example of Pururava. All right, here's an interesting example. Pururava became very attracted to Urvasi. And when he became attracted to Urvasi, of course, was cursed to come down from the heavenly planets. She is one of the apsaras. Sometimes apsaras are described as heavenly prostitutes. Anyway, I guess you understand what that means. They're not chased to one particular man or demigod. So anyway, so she came down. Pururva became attracted. She came down because she was cursed. She was cursed by Mitra and Varuna because she had agitated their senses, which is also interesting because sometimes we blame the sense object for agitating our senses. We used to see that in ISKCON, that the brahmacharis would get angry at the women for agitating their senses. But, you know, it's brahmacharis or the person's fault when their senses get agitated because they're the ones who are interested in that particular thing. It's like blaming some food or getting angry at some food for attracting you. Let's say if you see a pizza and get angry at the pizza. you know, just it's crazy. So anyway, so so Mitra and Varuna, they got very angry at this Urvasi. She was cursed, came down to the Earth planet, and Pururva saw her, and just one moment he became attracted to her. That was the one mistake he made. And when he became attracted to her, he naturally said, will you marry me, or will you live with me, or whatever? And she said, yes, of course, I will do that. And she was attracted to him. And she gave him some preconditions, a prenuptial agreement. Prenuptial agreement was that she would never see him naked. She'd always eat food cooked in ghee, no boiled food, no quinoa, or raw food or anything like that. Because in the heavenly planets, they eat food and ghee. I was telling you a story in Fiji where they like to eat food cooked in oil. And it's actually disgusting because Prabhupada said oil is for the outside, ghee is for the inside. This is Prabhupada's statement, and especially with it, they were offering oil to the deities too. I mean, all the deity preparations, because they thought it was better than ghee, somehow or other, you know, it's just in their consciousness. So anyway, in the heavenly planets, everything's cooked in ghee. The pakoras, I'm sure certain things like fruit is not cooked in ghee, but any cooked food is cooked in ghee. So she said, only food cooked in ghee, don't want to see you naked, and also I have these two little lammies. You know, she's high class. She didn't have dogs as pets or fish or anything, but lambs. So if you want to have pets, you should have lambs. But Mary had a little lamb. It's not that Mary had a little dog. Mary had a little lamb. So Urvasi had little lambs. So he agreed, you know, because he was so much enamored. Just one little, like I'm pointing out, just one little mistake, you know. Just one little inattention, bit of inattention, you know. And then the whole thing becomes ruined. So he became enamored, and we know eventually that Indra wanted her back. So Indra sent the Gandharvas in a celestial helicopter. And you know how helicopters, I don't know if you've ever seen on TV, the helicopters are looking for criminals. They have a spotlight on them. You ever seen that? Everyone's lived in L.A., you see this all the time in real life. You see helicopters, because there's so many criminals there. You see helicopters, I've seen so many times in L.A. Helicopters with spotlights shining on the criminals in the street. And of course, in Los Angeles, it's all televised too. Because they have the television station helicopter following the police helicopter. And so you could watch like chases on TV. Interesting, isn't it, Gopal? So anyway, so in this particular case, it wasn't televised. So these Gandharvas, they stole the lamb, the lambs, and it was in the middle of the night. And then she wakes up, the Urvasi wakes up, and she says to her husband, you know, you eunuch, basically, you let my lambs be stolen. And he, feeling so insulted, runs after the lambs, runs after the Gandharvas to rescue the lambs, but he forgets to put his clothes on. Because anyway, when you're so insulted, you forget, you know, you lose your common sense. So he ran out without his clothes on, and as I mentioned before, there was a spotlight in this celestial helicopter. So the Gandharvas, they took the spotlight, you know, aimed it at him, and the guy's there in his birthday suit, and Urvasi looks at him and says, "Yuck." You know, it's not like people are in this world that they like to see naked bodies or something like that. It is yucky. It's like when I've gone to preach at rainbow festivals, it's pretty yucky. People aren't wearing clothes. It's not like adorable. It's disgusting. So anyway, so she leaves. And after she leaves, he becomes completely depressed. And he starts to go all over the world to try to look for her. Finally, he runs into her somewhere, and then there's an arrangement he could meet with her one day a year. So the rest of the year he's counting down the days. You know, 365 days left to Urvasi. 64, 63. And, you know, his whole life is like that. And on leap year, the poor guy has an extra day to wait. So he just can't tolerate it. You know, he has to wait a whole year. And then eventually she tells him to go pray to some other people, and they give him a clone Urvasi, you know, or an imitation Urvasi, and discovers not the right person. He just becomes more depressed. Finally does a fire sacrifice where he depicts himself as one piece of wood and Urvasi is another piece of wood, and then he goes back to home, back to the Urvasi. So in other words, just from a little contemplation, the point I'm making is just from a little contemplation of sense objects, the whole chain of event ensues. This is what's pointed out in this particular verse. Just from Puranjana getting attracted to Puranjani, you have a whole civilization develop. Just one man falling in love. There's a whole civil. It's amazing, isn't it? How it develops like that. Or, let's say on a personal basis, I mean, maybe we don't fall in love, okay? So, just from one interaction with a sense object, what happens? Okay, let's analyze this according to the Acharyas, according to Rupa Goswami. When one interacts with a sense object, then, of course, let's go back a little bit. Before you interact with a sense object, you have to have an inclination. That's called a kuta. And then after the inclination comes the seed of desire, right? The bija, the seed. So we're talking about a seed. From a seed comes a whole tree. So, and then you have the actual action. All right, so you perform the action. You interact with some sense object. But not necessarily a sexual type of thing. But let's say you eat something that's not prasadam. So you interact with that sense object. Then, as a result, you get a karmic reaction, and you get another kuta and a bija. And it's a vicious cycle, and it increases more and more and more. The more kutas and bijas you get, the more you'll get in the future. So it just like compounds. Compounds. Just from a little mistake. Just one little action. You know, you think, you know, it's just one action, you know, just let me go already. It's like this thing called a tar baby. I don't know if you've heard of a tar baby. You just touch the thing. Some of you may not know what a tar baby is. Anyway, a tar baby is something that you touch, and it has tar, and you know, you can't get yourself off it. And so what happens is when you try to push yourself off of it by touching it, you know, you push it away, you get the other hand stuck. And then you put the foot to push the hands away, and the foot is stuck. And then you put the other foot, and that's stuck. You put your nose to push everything away, and your nose is stuck on the tar baby. And finally, your whole body is stuck to this tar baby. Just because you touched it, you know, you just wanted to see what it is, right? Touch it. And then you're just stuck. So, therefore the conclusion is, that what I'm getting to, is you have to be extremely careful what you think about. Because thinking, of course, there's thinking, feeling, willing, the three stages of the mind. Or contemplation, when you contemplate something, you get attached. Jayate visha pumsang sangha stesha pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha pajayate. Anyway, this Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. When you contemplate something, you think about something, you get that. So you really have to control it in the beginning. Like if Puranjana had just seen Puranjani and he just said, no way, I'm not going to get into this whole thing. Then there wouldn't have been his civilization, there wouldn't have been his entanglement. You know, so many problems avoided just by avoiding the little thing in the beginning, right? It's amazing. So many big problems avoided by avoiding something tiny in the beginning. Okay. So the question is, The question is, how do we do it? Because we contemplate different things. I'm not only gross sense objects, but we contemplate different emotional states, you know, or depressive states, or we have so many different objects. Because if we're talking about sense objects, it's not only the five that are listed here, because five senses and the five sense objects. Let's see, we go here. Oh yeah, agandha, that means the smell, rasa, the taste, arupa, the form, sparsha, the touch, and shabda, the sound. But there's also subtle sense objects too, like manasasthani, indriyani, prakritisthani, karshati, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The living entity is struggling with the six senses. There's six senses, which include the mind. So what is the methodology that we have for not contemplating, not falling into the pitfalls of starting something small that snowballs and then just like ruins our whole spiritual life? The method out, what I found, I mean, this is practical advice, practical experience, that we have to be able to identify something that is not productive for Krishna consciousness. In other words, reject everything unfavorable and accept everything favorable. And that means even the thoughts that come into the mind. That's the first two principles of surrender, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? Accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. So that doesn't mean only food or, you know, some beautiful person who happens to come along or whatever, or some service. It means thoughts that come into the mind. So each and every thought that comes in the mind, and there's so many thoughts that bubble up from the repository, the nectarian repository of whatever, that are there in our, anyway, they're there in our subtle body. How do they bubble? They bubble up because of the impressions. I mean, where are they coming from? The impressions of past lives. Like Prabhupada said, you know, sometimes you'll see gold, sometimes you'll see a mountain, and you put it together in a dream as a gold mountain. Or you'll have so, there's so many impressions. And until we're fully proficient in chanting the holy names, because we know by chanting Chaito Dharpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadbhagni Nirvarpanam, that the cleansing of the heart is there, so all the impressions just get eradicated. But right now, we're not in that pure stage. So the things pop up, like, when we least expect them, right? When we least expect them, they just, boom. How did that happen? It's like a scary monster show. It's like being in our mind is like being in the horror house in the amusement park. You know, you're riding in this car, and then all of a sudden it turns the corner and some skeleton jumps out at you. I used to do that all the time when I was a kid. I would go in these horror houses. There's some joy in being frightened to death. I don't know what it is, but kids like that. So therefore we have to become very astute in examining the thoughts that come into our mind. And what do we do? I mean, what I do, practical experience, is I examine each and every thought that, as soon as it pops in the mind. And if it's something that's not productive of Krishna consciousness, I just start chanting. I go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Because so many thoughts come in that are productive. I mean, and so many thoughts that are unproductive. There's a thought of envy. I mean, just like the other night, you know, I mean, this is not envy, this is a positive thing. The other night I read a book that was written by one of my god brothers, and I really liked the book. It was a book about it was Devamrita Maharaj's book about the Vedic tradition. It was a very nice book, actually, a very nice historical book. And so the thought came to my mind is, that, oh, I'm so happy to have a god brother. So that was a positive thought like that. So I didn't try to eradicate it by chanting Hare Krishna. So the positive thought I cultivated. You understand? I cultivated. Oh, I said, I'm so proud having a god brother like this, someone who's serving Prabhupada. I said, well, this is a positive thing. I should think about it more. So in other words, it's not simply chanting when you get the negative thoughts that come in, which is 99% of the thoughts. But when, you know, the 1% of the time you get some positive thing, you actually start meditating on it. You contemplate it more. Like you think, oh, what a nice outfit the deity has. And now that you start chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, got to get rid of that thought. That's my body consciousness. Then you might as well become a Buddhist if you're going to do that stuff. Right? Yeah. Then, you know, so positive thought. You know, so I was contemplating, oh, how nice this God brother is. You know, he's so intelligent and very proud. You know, Prabhupada would be proud of him. So I just allowed that thought to continue to circulate in my mind more and more. So, like someone was asking a question yesterday, you know, how to get rid of the bad thoughts. We were talking yesterday. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, all these thoughts come to the mind. So one person said, in order to get rid of all the thoughts, you just like put them in a little box and close the door of the box. I tried it. Didn't work for me. So instead, I take the positive thoughts that actually are an impetus to chant better. Like the thoughts of gratefulness towards Krishna. Like I count my blessings, as they say. I think, you know, what are my blessings? Well, I've had the association with Prabhupada, I have Prabhupada's books, I have the association of devotees in his movement, I've been given the highest truth. I mean, all these things just far outweigh whatever negative thing has happened or is happening or will happen or it could be in my mind, isn't it? I mean, I could think of so many negative things. And there's like, yeah, just like last night I was thinking, what about this rascal disciple? You know, I tried so hard to mention Krishna conscious. Nah, he's not in the room, don't worry. So I tried so hard to make him Krishna conscious, and I just, why don't I just, you know, what's the use of it all? So, you know, that sort of thought will actually impede my spiritual progress. So instead, you know, I think of some nice disciple who's doing well. Or anyway, so the point I'm making is to catch it in the beginning. To catch the thought in the beginning. Because the subtle form of sense gratification is a thought. It's not the actual action. It's actually the inclination. It's not even the thought. It's the inclination. The kuta. The inclination. So we have to be very much introspective and see what's bubbling up from the nether worlds of our consciousness. And anyway, and then cultivate the good things, and when you find some negative thing, just go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And take shelter of Krishna's names. And then it works. And then you're always positive. And you're always happy. Like that. Because the sense enjoyment doesn't make you happy. I mean, it puts you in anxiety. I mean, it's like Paranjana here. The poor guy, you may say, well, he enjoyed with Paranjana, he had so many grandchildren. Don't you think those grandchildren caused them anxiety? Because some of them were getting sick, some of them were getting married to the wrong person. I mean, it's just like, huh? I mean, the more you have in this world, the more anxiety is, first of all, because people want to steal it, something can happen. The more children, let's say you had 20 children, then it'd be anxiety all the time, isn't it? I mean, those of you who have like two children or three children, you're worried about them. You know, where are they now? Are they going to get married? Are they sick? I mean, it's like you see even a little month with a child. Isn't it the child has sniffles? Oh, he has a fever. I was just in Govardhan with some of my disciples who had a child. And, oh, he has a fever. What's wrong with him? So much anxiety. So The more you get into this world, the more anxiety you get. Of course, for Krishna, we're willing to accept that anxiety, but for ourselves, better we just like take the minimum, you know, of this world, not try to entangle ourselves any more than necessary. So, any questions or comments? We have about 2 minutes left. So, this is an interesting practical suggestion on how to deal with thoughts. Every thought should be examined. Is it productive? Is it not productive? Is it going to bring me closer to Krishna? Or is it just going to agitate my mind? You know, what's the use of a thought that will agitate my mind? I mean, feeling sorry for oneself, that's another thought. You know, nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows the sorrow. you know, I'm so blue, I don't know what to do. You know, you can get into it. You really get into it. It's just like repeats. It's like a loop. It's an endless loop that increases in volume all the time. So instead, just chant or think of something positive. So any questions? Yeah.
Just a comment and just an appreciation of clarifying, accepting what's favorable as cultivating positive thoughts. That was really helpful for
yeah.
me as far as just being able to refocus. I don't know, somehow. And then that and then refocusing on the holy names and positive thoughts and always being positive. That even unfavorable can become positive. That's really nice.
Yeah, we don't want to contemplate on things that are agitating or aggravating.
No, but just that by changing it and refocusing it, that's
yeah.
be a positive. That's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, because we all have aggravating things. I mean, you know, just dealing with disciples is pretty aggravating, but not all of them. But, I mean, just it's just aggravating because you think, you know, oh, I did so much for that. And what did they do for me? Or what are they doing now? Or, you know, wow. You know, because you think of so many people who have fallen down from devotional service. It can get really aggravating. It can. It can get really upsetting and aggravating. So instead, what's the need to meditate on these things? It's not productive to Krishna consciousness. So productive things should be meditated on. And you can get into negative thought patterns forever. And there's no use. It doesn't produce anything. It's not... It's not useful. Yeah.
So you mentioned Los Angeles earlier.
Yeah.
And there's certain atmospheres in the world that is simply an assault on the senses.
Yeah.
So many loud noises, so many bright lights, so many things advertising and pushing you to do so many things. So under those circumstances, when it's far more difficult to just push the thoughts out, is it more valuable to remove oneself from such an atmosphere?
If one's not strong enough, yes. But generally, what I find when I go to Los Angeles is it's so overwhelming that it's ridiculous. It's like, you know, it's like a facade. I don't want to say facade, but it's just like a Fellini film. In other words, it's just like, it's not even attractive because it's just like too much garbage in the air. Like that. But if one is in an immature stage and they're in a situation where there's many attractive things like, I mean, obviously, let's say if you go to the beach and you're some man and all the attractive girls are walking around, you know, at least take your glasses off. You know, myself, I take my glasses off, I can't tell the difference between a man and a woman. So, good protection. I mean, so obviously, I mean, certain situations are not going to be so helpful for your Krishna consciousness. You know, if you're a young man, you don't want to put yourself in the middle of the beach where all the ladies are just walking around half naked. You know, you can try your best. Every time you open your eyes, you're going to be going, Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! You know, in a certain circumstances like that, you may have to remove yourself.
What about a situation where it's not attractive, but it's angering or
sad? Is that the same thing? Same thing, you know, if someone's not mature. If a mature person, Prabhupada said a pure devotee can be in a room with like millions of attractive ladies and not feel anything. Or a pure devotee. So you have to understand your level of advancement, what sort of situation you're capable of dealing with. But even if you're in a locked room, I mean, the mind's going to still bubble up with all this interesting stuff. But yes, but externally, there are certain circumstances we may not be able to deal with. That is a fact. And so then, you know, you put yourself in a different situation. You have to be practical. But Los Angeles is not so attractive. I mean, there's smog everywhere. Yuck. I mean, it's hard for me to understand why people would want to live in that city. Other than serving Krishna. You know, I can understand why people want to preach. I mean, I would be attracted to being there to preach, but...